Mission Minded Episode 3.
Yes!
This is definitely one of the top three podcasts we have had so far on Mission Minded Grace Church. So excited. Hope you're excited too. Tonight, we have the Ernsts. The Elder Ernst, that is. Brenda is on the show and she is just flat out amazing. And then there's also her husband, Don. He's pretty good. He actually is Pastor Don now. Not the Pastor Don, of course, but certainly a Pastor Don. So it's really great to talk to them. They've been members of the church for years and years and years. We've been supporting them. So if you haven't been around, you get to know them. If you have been around, you get to reconnect with them. I think you're really going to like the show. Me personally, my favorite part is the part where they really open up about some of their prayer life. Right around minute 20 or 22, I'd say. So definitely, if you don't listen to anything else, listen to that part because it's super powerful. But let's get into it. Let's have some fun. Okay, welcome to Mission Minded, Episode 3. Tonight we are talking to Don and Brenda Ernst. Hello, Don and Brenda. How are you?
Hey, doing good.
Hello there. Doing well.
Thanks for meeting with me. I know it's been kind of a crazy week. You guys have been traveling quite a bit recently, right? Down to Ohio, did you say?
Yeah, Ohio and Oregon, but it's been fun family visits, so it's okay.
Oh, good. Well, I think that, I mean, you guys have been missionaries in our church for a long time, so I am super excited to have Brenda on the show tonight. And of course, Don is here also, so that's exciting. exciting.
In the background.
But I guess we just want to kick it off and kind of start asking you some questions about what took you into the mission field and what, I know you were originally attending First Baptist. Can you tell me a little bit about your time in Colorado and attending First Baptist Church?
Well, we moved to Colorado in 77 and started attending the church right away, and which was a great church for us, helped us really grow spiritually and got involved in some different positions within the church. And we were there for like 13 years before the Lord called us up to Alaska.
Gotcha. And what was the, what would you say was the impetus where you really felt like you were being called to Alaska?
I have to say that clear back when I was a young teen, I just knew, felt a calling then, I guess, that I was going to be working with Native people. And then when I met Don, and he was a brand new believer, he was not interested in missions because he wasn't ready yet. And that's why we feel God took us to Salida to get us into the church to grow him. And at the end of that 13 years, about that time frame, Don came home one day and just told me that he's been feeling we say call. It's just easier than maybe trying to explain this passion and desire and burden now that he was to pursue doing mission work. And of course, I was a good wife and I didn't say, see, I told you. I just lied.
The interesting thing is, though, that she thought that she was going to go someplace south, like to South America or someplace like that. And of course, we ended up going north, which is her normal direction orientation.
Yeah, I'm challenged.
Well, so I didn't realize, Don, that you were a fairly new believer when you moved to Salida. So, Brenda, let me get this clear. Brenda, you kind of grew up more in a Christian home, and Don, you came to it later. Is that true?
Yeah, I grew up in a Catholic home, and I didn't get saved until I was 25.
Gotcha. Did that happen through, can you kind of walk me through what that was like, coming to Christ later in life instead of growing up in the church?
Yeah, I think when I finally began to sit down at the urging of a young girl to start reading the Bible, and when I realized what Scripture taught and then realized my need for Christ in my life, and making that commitment to him, I think as I look back, because I didn't have that for all of those years, when I finally did open up the Bible and see what is there and see it's God's word and it's the truth, I think because of that, I am definitely very passionate about his word.
I love that. I feel like oftentimes we get, at least my story is growing up in the church, obviously. And I think that a lot of people's are coming from a small town, especially those that have stayed in First Baptist and that know you from our childhood. That's going to be our story. But I like to hear my wife's story is very similar to yours. Grew up Catholic and then really, I guess, at the urging of a young, dashing, good-looking male, decided to start read the Bible as well. and has a very similar story to you. So it resonates with me. But well, tell me a little bit now, so you think of getting called to mission field. And like you said, you got called north instead of to Mexico. But a lot of times when you think about the mission field, you don't think about staying in the United States. And I know Alaska is not the same as the continental United States, but can you tell me a little bit about what called you to Alaska and, or what your passion was to move to Alaska?
Well, honestly, we started, just looking into all kinds of missions at that point then, not even really sure where. And, but we came across an ad for a little mission organization in Alaska. And I guess Don and I, just looking back, we said, you know, we took what we liked, what we grew up with, our interests, our likes, our, like, we didn't like heat. We preferred the cold. And Don wanted to fly. This was something they could use in the ministry there in Alaska, flying to the other villages. And yet he could still teach the word and do mission work. It wasn't just pure flying like so many other mission groups wanted. And so we just, all this just started melding together that we saw this was an area we felt we could fit into better in Alaska, and really caught our interest. And so when we pursued it and visited with the director of that mission, his enthusiasm and excitement, I guess, just finished pulling us into that group. And so he just saw a real good fit with Don's flying and our living in Colorado, living off the land some, you know. It was a little prep. And so anyway, just a lot of things just finally in your life that you think are just little quirks that you like start coming together, and you realize God put them there for a reason. And we were going to fit into this ministry in Alaska better than many other places.
That's awesome. Tell me, so I know you mentioned the flying. I know you did a lot of flying. Don, can you tell me let's talk about that for a second. I don't want to get past the other part of your mission of living in Huslia, but what was the flying like? You were flying small. Well, hang on a second. When I say flying, you were often crashing small planes in Alaska, if I'm not mistaken.
That could be.
Yeah. So what were you doing flying? What was your mission? How did flying correlate to your mission?
Well, I think probably something that people might find interesting is I actually learned to fly in Salida. And so it was a good place to learn because of the high altitude and just the mountains there, learning to fly in the mountains. And then moving on up into Alaska, a lot of the flying was like flying kids to Bible camp or flying VBS teams around, work teams around, flying missionaries around. There was a lot of time that I was spent doing search and rescue flights for some of the villages around in the area. And then also just moving some of the local people around if there happened to be a funeral or some event going on. So there was a great variety in the flying, but it all centered around, yeah, just a little small airplane out in the bush flying around.
And just out of curiosity, how many planes did you crash, Don?
Well, my percentage is pretty good as far as crashing. I've had four airplanes and I've had accidents with three of them.
So the message there is if Don asks you to get in a plane, run the other direction. Oh, no, I'm of course kidding. But okay, so tell me now a little bit about Huslia. And what that community is like. How many people live in Huslia?
Well, there's around 325 people that live there. They are Athabascan Indians, and they live in the interior, mostly of Alaska. And so we worked with that people group. And I would say that it was a slow slow acceptance when we moved there. We felt like it was a good 4 years before they started to open up and believe that we were maybe going to hang around a while and not be like a lot of the teachers that move in, last 1 or 2 years, and then leave. And so kind of a slow process winning them over. But that's where also Don's Airplane was helpful in opening some doors.
What is the culture like in a town of 300 people in a place like that where because roads are not, there aren't roads into Hoosley, are there?
There's no roads to Hoosley. It's just, you traveled on the river by boat or airplane or cross country when it was frozen. Everybody is basically related to each other in that village and the village upriver and downriver, nearest ones. So not only are they culturally the same, they had lived there all their life and they were all related. And so it's a little tough to break in.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a very deep family dynamic in that spot. I know from conversations in the past, you've talked about how there's living in a small town in Alaska. It's half the year it's dark often. There are difficulties with substance abuse and things like that. Is that something that you got to see occasionally in Alaska?
Yeah, without a doubt, you get to see it, and this kind of becomes part of life.
I guess the thing that we realized it becomes a part of your life is because you are constantly involved helping people bury their family members and just a lot of sad, hard things. And we found it was so difficult for us. We just said, we can't imagine what it's like for the Native people when it's their family member. This isn't the first time. It's one of many times. And there was no hope for them to lean on, like we were leaning on the Lord to get through. So it's a very oppressive environment in some ways. And yet because of their close-knitness and knowing each other, it's a very supportive system as well. So you kind of experience both extremes.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. I was going to say there's such a juxtaposition between it, because it does create hard times and difficulties. But that closeness is a type of relationship that I think we think we live in a small town in Salida, and I don't think we experience the closeness that you have in a community of 350 people.
I think one of the things that helps add to that closeness is just the fact that it is isolated, and not just because it's hard to travel to it, but just geographically. I mean, the next closest village to our village was like 70 air miles away. And so you have a vast amount of country where it's just nothing but wilderness, and you're just this little isolated village out in the wilderness. And so there's not a lot of connection in some ways.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Was there a church already going in this village when you moved there, or did you guys plant the church?
There was a church there, but it was not an evangelical church. And so after we were there about 3 to 4 years, we planted a small community church there and began to work through that.
And what was your role involved in the church, Don?
Basically, it would be what you would consider a pastoral type role.
So tell me with that a little bit. I think one of the questions that I had that I've been thinking about recently is a lot of missionaries, especially young missionaries, are going to some of these places, especially in like Alaska, saying, I'm going to move there, I'm going to live for Christ, and I'm going to show Christ by living Christ. But I always felt like your mission was very much centered around, we are going to reach out. We're going to live with them. Yes, we're going to show them Christ by being a part of their lives. But you also very much injected the gospel, and from what our conversations in the past. And that's been something that's always been really encouraging to me, because I think a lot of missionaries these days think, well, I'm going to live my life and Christ is going to show through that. But at the same time, I think that introducing the gospel is the most important part of any mission. Would you say that was something that you agree with? And was the church and making it evangelical, was that part of that process for you?
We would definitely feel like there is certainly an approach in which, as we live there with the people, they could see our life and they could see that we lived differently than them. And I think that's a very valuable part of the ministry, but I think that's it. It's just a part of the ministry. Because if they see your life and they see Christ reflected through it, or at least something that's different, and they wonder what it is, then when you actually begin to share the scripture with them, they can realize that you're saying something that is actually real in your life. But I think that needs to be a part of it, is to where you are actually sharing verbally with them what the scripture teaches, give them an understanding of who Christ is and our need for him in our life.
If you didn't share Christ, in their mind, it could just be because, oh, you can handle life this way or living this way because you're white or because you're richer or because there could be a lot of reasons. And so we need to be sure to tell them why we live the way we do. It's because of what Jesus Christ has done for us.
Oh, that's beautiful. I think that's something that is close off the heels of my conversation with Ryan and Rebecca, because they deal with a lot of poor people as well that just are in those situations. And it's easy to say, well, we're going to do something to get them out of their situation. But in the end, if you don't inject the gospel, you're still not giving them spiritual hope. And so I think that's a really valuable part. And I agree that you need to, you live it and you gain value in the community and people see you living it and there's great value in that. But I do believe you have to share it. And so I've always loved that part of your ministry, that you're very open in sharing your faith. And yeah, that's not just in Housley. You've done that everywhere you've gone. So I've always valued that about you. How long were you in Housley? You said it was like 27 years?
27 years in Housley. And then when we left the village there, we've been in North Pole 3 years now.
And this is something, tonight's conversation is a little bit different. I definitely wanted to get to some of what your ministry was like in Housley. But I do want to talk a lot tonight about your current mission field, so to speak, because it's a little bit different than most missionaries. The people that we've talked to recently have been either relatively new. Ryan and Rebecca have been in the field 7 and 8 years. The Campbells have been in the field now 20 some years. I have to remember. I feel terrible. I don't know that right off the top of my head. But whereas you're kind of at the end of your missionary time, I know you transferred to North Pole. Why did you transfer to North Pole? And what was that like after spending 27 years in Housley?
Well, you know, there's times that you think, I can't wait to get out of the village. There's things you're going to enjoy. And then once we left, it was like, wow, how much we missed about living in the village. And as much as the people can maybe frustrate you when you're away from them, you realize how much you miss them and love them. It's just, it's an interesting combo. But we left the village because we got a young family to take our place. And we just felt like if we stayed, people would just continue to come to us because of our long-term relationship. And we wanted them to connect with the young missionary couple that was going to start living there. And so we just felt it was best for everybody that we just got out of the way and let the young couple and the villagers begin their journey together.
I think the one thing that's interesting too is we had made a covenant, in particular, I had made a covenant with the Lord that we would never leave the village unless, just as he called us in, that he would also call us out. And I remember we were in Oklahoma one time, and I just really felt like the Lord had given me like a heart transplant. Instead of a passion for the people there, it was gone. It was going to be replaced with something else. And I didn't say anything to Duke about that, but within about a day and a half, as we were just traveling around Oklahoma and we were visiting with each other, she just told me, she says, you know, I think our time in Housley is done. And I just knew that, okay, if the Lord told her as he told me, then definitely our time is done and we need to step aside and he has new plans for our life. And so as hard as it was to kind of leave the village, there was a little bit of excitement to know, okay, the Lord's directing us in a new path.
Before we move on for that, because I've got some follow-up questions with that, but You talk about how the Lord just kind of is directing you. Can you talk to me about the prayer life of a missionary and how important that is? Because I think, I'm going to let you just tell me, what do you think, how important is it to be constantly praying and in tune with Christ and talking to Christ and in order to understand when he's ready for you to make that change?
Well, I don't think you can overemphasize the importance of prayer in any Christian life. I don't think it matters where you are. I think there needs to be that communication with the Lord through prayer and through his word. But especially in our setting where we were at, because as my wife mentioned earlier, the oppressive spirit that is there, you realize very quickly that there's like no way you're going to make it if you don't rely upon the Lord, because there's not enough in you to carry you through. And because of that, you need to be in constant communication with the Lord, whether it be through his word or through prayer.
You know, just as anybody else, a missionary, I mean, we're human, and there's times you hit a wall or a dry spell, and it's just hard to pray through things. And that is when I just leaned heavily and was greatly encouraged, knowing there were all of our supporters out there praying for us to keep me going when things were tough. And I was just struggling personally myself in my communication with the Lord or prayer life. And so it's important, but there are times you're just going to struggle. And man, what a blessing it was to know there were people out there praying for me when I was struggling doing it at that very moment myself.
I remember one of the phone calls that my wife had one time. She called up one of her lady friends and they chatted for a while and then they hung up, and my wife called her back and said, "That's not what I needed. I didn't need to chat. I need to hear somebody pray."
And So she said, "Well, what do you want me to pray about?" And I said, "I don't need anything prayed about. I just need to hear somebody pray. I haven't heard that for a long time." And so she just started praying and I listened and wept. She carried me through.
I love that. That's the type of answer I was hoping for. I think Don, you put it really well, that first of all, it's not just in the mission field. We have to pray, you know, even though it is an oppressive spirit as it feels up there. I mean, we're still experiencing that here. There's just more things to distract us at times, I think, here. And we've studied our prayer life recently in church. And I think that it's really been even more prevalent to me how important that is to stay in constant communication. And then Brenda, for you to say, you know, this is sometimes it's hard, even when you're a missionary, when this is your job or when this is what you're doing. I think a lot of people in the church look at missionaries and think, oh, wow, this person has it all together. They must be praying 18 times a day. They must be tithing 35%. It's just all the things that there's almost a pedestal. And so to hear you say, hey, there's times that it's going to be a struggle and that I needed other people to pray, like you said, just pray with you, not even about anything in particular, but just to pray with you and the encouragement that brought. It's important to understand that the fellowship part of that prayer as well. So that was great. Thank you for sharing that. I know that's a bit more personal, but let's move on a little bit. So what called you, or what work are you now doing in North Pole, or what have you been doing over the last 3 years?
Well, when we were getting ready to leave Huslia, we came this direction, and when we came in, it took us a little while to find a residence here in North Pole, and we didn't know exactly quite yet what we're doing, but the mission approached me and wanted to know if I would become the regional ministry director in Alaska, which basically means that I would help to oversee all the missionaries that are out on the field and do what we could to help them so that they could be effective in their ministry in the village setting. And so we've done that for about 4 years now. And then just recently, while we were in North Pole here, I did a 1 year time frame of being an interim pastor at a church in Fairbanks, and really enjoyed doing that because basically it gave me the opportunity to preach. And that's probably my greatest passion in life, is to preach the Word of God. And so then when that time came to an end, then shortly after that, within a few months, I began to help out our church that we joined here in North Pole, Community Baptist Church, and filled in a little bit as an interim pastor there. And after doing that for a few months, I decided I would finally apply for the position of pastor. I was hesitant because I just felt really unqualified, and I know my weaknesses. But anyhow, I just felt like the Lord was opening that window and calling me to it. And so I went ahead and went through the process of the step to become the pastor, and the church called me. And so starting in the middle of August, I became full-time pastor at the church.
That's fantastic, Don. Did they must not have had the full funds to hire a real pastor. Is that what you're saying?
We have to support them.
Oh, that's funny. I've tried to, a lot of people don't know that you're coming across as not sarcastic, but I know better. So occasionally I'm going to interject and throw some of these things out there. Well, no, that's fantastic. It can be difficult. So you felt unqualified after spending, I mean, it's interesting because weren't you a pastor? You were a pastor in Huslia for 27 years. What made you feel like you were unqualified for this position?
Because I was moving into a setting where it was on the road system and it was with white people. And so I know that there are many people who were sitting in the church who knew more about the scripture than that I probably knew. I knew that I didn't have the educational requirements that a lot of pastors have. I know that I struggle with my English. And so I just thought, I don't know that this would really work. But I also knew how the Lord gifted me. And so I just felt like, you know what? I'll just give it a whirl and see what happens.
I love it. And God, I mean, God has clearly spoken to you over the past few years and guided you into this position. So I think it's a good fit. As much as I give you a hard time, I think it's a really good fit because I do know how much you love to preach. Go ahead.
We stopped and we visited Cochran Hills Bible Camp, and the native couple that run that camp there, we know really, really well. And so as we were visiting them, he asked me what I was doing now. He said, and so I told him, well, I'm actually stepping into a pastoral role at a church here in North Pole. And he just kind of said, well, it's about time. You've wasted almost 4 years of your life. It's about time you get back doing what you really do.
That's awesome. Well, that's good to have a friend who's honest with you. Well, so I have some other things I want to talk about tonight, and some of them, one of the things I kind of want you to share with me is, and this is, so for the audience, Brenda, or as you might have heard Don call her Duke, so if you've heard that earlier, now you know that that's less confusing. Brenda's been sick this week, so I'm trying not to overdo her voice, but I did want her to be a part of this podcast for a couple reasons. And one of the reasons is because 30 years in the mission field, and in Alaska, not just in a community, but in a very small, tight-knit community, in a kind of extreme circumstances where you have whole periods of the year where it's dark for most of the day. I wanted to ask you both a little bit about marriage and the ups and downs that can have, especially in that situation. I think that a lot of times we see missionaries and they tell me that their relationship grows throughout that time, that they're together and they're in the Word and they're praying. But can you tell me a little bit about what it takes to have a successful marriage and be in the mission field where you're relying on other support from people, and it's a small community. And like I said, there's some extreme circumstances there. Can you just kind of talk about what that took in order to have a successful marriage?
You know, I think one thing I would share is Don and I were a little older when we went to the mission field. So Don was 40 and I was 35. And I would say that I am thankful that we had those years, early years, maybe before we went to the village and into mission work and got our marriage stronger. And so I think to me, that was a benefit. And so when we arrived at the village, I felt like I think we had matured in our relationship with each other. And so that was one benefit right there, even before we got to the field. But there's challenges for us, and I'm sure it's for other missionaries, that you don't get away. The only way we could get out of the village to get away from people calling and knocking and coming up and visiting, just to have the two of us, you had to get in a boat and leave and drive up the river. And that's fine, except there's gnats and mosquitoes. Or you had to go out in the snow, go, and that's fine. You had some fun, but after a while, you're starting to freeze and need to get back home. So there was just some limitations, and you couldn't afford to just hop in a plane and fly off and stay somewhere, paying for hotel and travel. So it was a challenge to just be together all the time and yet feel like you didn't have time with each other while you're together all the time, because there were so many needs and demands on you. And I would say, you know, I mean, besides the Lord helping us with, like you said, the time you just spend in prayer and study and talking and stuff. But I think our sense of humor helped us a lot, too. And I was thankful for Don just having a sense of humor and could joke about things instead of getting worked up over it, maybe. And that was another benefit. So, I mean, practically, just those are some things besides the spiritual times with the Lord that would help.
I think the one thing that's important, too, is we always made sure that we had time for, I think in the lower 48, you call it like a date night or something like that, when you can get away with your spouse and go have some time together. And so we always made sure that we went out on dates. And that basically what that would entail would be that the village dump was like about 2.5 miles out of town. And so you would either get on the snow go or get in a four wheeler or something and haul you'd get together, haul your trash out there, throw it in the dump, and then ride back home. So you had 5 miles where you could just be together alone.
What a date. That was a
date. It's so funny because all the different missionaries in the village talk about their dump dates.
Oh, that's funny. As soon as you said that, I'm not sure you heard me laugh. I was like, what do you call it up there, Don? But I see it's hard to call it date night when you're headed to the dump.
Lovely
evening tonight. We're headed to the local landfill, and I'm gonna, you know, sit underneath the stars for a bit. There's obviously, are there restaurants in the village? I guess I've never even thought about that, but is there a restaurant or anything like that in the village?
You're not going to go bowling. You're not going to go to a movie. You're not going to go to a restaurant. There was nothing like that in the village.
Interesting. Yeah, I hadn't even thought about some of those. I guess I'd call it complications. I mean, I don't know. I lived in Denver and we had no money. And so at the time, we didn't go bowling or go to movies. So I guess maybe in some ways I can understand it, even though we were in a different situation. That's interesting, though. But yeah, I think practical ways to still invest in each other, I think that's good advice, because so often life just gets busy. But in the end, that's how you make a marriage work, is by investing in your partner, I think.
Well, I think, again, you know, we just look back and, okay, we both have a sense of humor. We're maybe just a little more laid back and not as excitable. And yet how neat that is that God gave us that, because that's some of the things that kept us going, you know? And so that's where I just say, God didn't make any mistakes when he called us where he called us, and he had us all, he was preparing us from the womb on with our personalities and just many things, getting us ready for this time in the village when he knew we just needed to make it on our own with his help, but maybe not with other believers, you know, just him and me, Don and me and the Lord. And so I just love how many things we saw in our life in the village and realized that God made us that way, knowing we would need it in our ministry.
Absolutely. Now there is another part of your life, and you talk about you when you said, you know, just me and Don in the village, there's another part of your life that we haven't even talked about yet. And I think it goes along with the marriage concept, because you also had three kids in this village. Now you didn't have them in the village, but you have three kids, right? How old were they when you took them to Alaska?
When we moved into the village, I believe that they were, well, let's see, 12, 10, and 8 or about there. And the ages, our daughter being the oldest, and then two boys next.
And that's Josh and Darius, I believe, correct?
Correct.
Okay, I still always call him Jason. I know it's going to bother him for a long time.
Yep. The answers to a lot of things.
Well, that's true. tell me about that a little bit, though. What was it like raising kids in a town like that? Because I think, this is a great example. So for me, we have a little tiny ditch that runs in the back of our yard, and we're in a little subdivision. And I can't tell you how many times people have told us we need to be careful of that little ditch, because once it's running, our kid could get swept off. And I agree with that. However, I have to imagine that there's a few more dangers in the Alaskan interior than there is a little ditch outside the back of your yard. Can you tell me a little bit about what it's like raising kids in an environment like that? I mean, they're playing in different spots than we are down here.
That's probably true, yeah. I think probably one of the best things that raising a family up there in the village, as far as that I look at, is, yeah, they got a lot of training in the outdoors as far as what to be careful of and what things to do and not to do. Because it really is, when you're out there in the bush, I mean, if you make a mistake, so many times you're in a setting where you're by yourself and nobody's there to assist you if you have a need. And it could be your last mistake that you make. And so we've seen it happen many times in the village setting there with someone from within the village where they misjudged, miscalculated, and that was their last mistake. I think probably one of the best things about raising the kids up there, because of the isolation, and then just because we weren't, as a family, related to anybody else in the village, where they had all of their family, we didn't have anybody else. But what that did, though, was that brought us incredibly close as a family, because we were the only family we had, and so the kids got really close to each other, and we got close as parents to them. And so many things that we did, we always did together as a family. And so that was one of the huge blessings. There wasn't the opportunity to go join this sport or do this activity and then going all different directions. No, we did things together, and so that was good.
Absolutely. So that, though, adds to another part of the marriage concept. You talk about how it's just, you know, Brenda, you said how it's just you and Don, but so you add three kids into the house basically all the time. That's a bit hectic. What was it like? Were they, I mean, I know your kids. So I know you got close, but was that pretty hectic at times living in a small house in a village like that? Or was it pretty much all good things where it allowed you to grow closer together?
I guess it wasn't that much of a problem. And I guess that for a kid that grows up in that, that's their norm. They don't know any different. And where I felt maybe they missed out on some things in life, they feel like, man, we got to experience stuff that most kids will never, ever experience. And they felt blessed. And so, no, I think it was good. I think the only thing that our children got tired of is we had village children in our home. They would be with us 24/7 if we'd have left them do that. And so there would be times our children would just let us know they needed a break from the other kids. And so that might have been for them one of the, more of the struggles. But I think they really enjoyed village life. I feel like we just had to take some other precautions that would be similar to somebody in a city taking to protect your kids, where there's alcohol and drug addictions and things, and so you just have to be careful, make sure your kids are together in groups and not isolated, and especially your daughter. And so there are precautions, and we limited them in some of their activities for safety reasons, but overall it was a positive experience, I think, for them.
Yeah, I mean, one of your kids is still in the village, correct?
Yeah, the daughter who we thought would probably want to leave the village, that changed when she fell in love with one of the guys there. And so she's actively involved now with helping them run their dogs and run trap lines and stuff that I didn't really think I didn't picture her doing.
That's awesome. That's God found the right match even in that. So where you're as a parent thinking, oh, this is not where she's going to end up, that's exactly where she was meant to end up.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit too about, we're going to come back a little bit to Darius in a while. Where's Josh at these days?
He's in Oregon, Portland, Oregon now with his wife, and he has a little girl and baby boy. And so I think they're going to stay there. They moved around quite a bit looking for a place to live and be content, and I think they found it. So Portland, Oregon now.
Oh, that's awesome. So you've got one. So Jesse is in Alaska. Josh is in Oregon. And Darius moved as far away from Dawn as possible, as far as I understand it, without going to the South Pole.
it's still not far enough because I still go see him.
He mentioned that to me last time I talked to him. He thought, man, if we could just move further south. Can you tell me a little bit about what Darius is doing right now? Because this, I always find it interesting. He basically, let me give a little background. Darius just came to the church a few months ago. He is now a missionary down in Mexico. Tell me a little bit about what he's doing. I know I'm going to talk with him soon, so you don't have to give me a huge view, but just a little bit about what he's doing. And maybe talk to me a little bit about what it's like to see one of your kids become a missionary when they grew up as a missionary kid.
Darius lives in Cancun, Mexico. His ministry is leading a youth with a mission base, as well as running their own personal ministry, Tree of Life, and their outreaches and ministry outreaches in the Cunamaya squatters village there. And they're investing in that specific community by having a school outreach. Teams come down to help build more permanent structures, get them out of the shanties and stuff like that. So, and one reason, God called him to do a ministry there, but the Lord made sure that he knew that he wanted him to stay there. And so he introduced him to this beautiful girl who did translating and lived in Mexico, and he fell in love with her. And so Lord made sure he stayed there and didn't leave then. So, and I'm proud of him doing the mission work. I guess there's times that you kind of, as a parent, you know that financially it's going to be tough, some concerns, and yet through all these years, we've seen God provide for us, and we've never been in want, and we've actually had more than we sometimes look at what we have and what we've got to do, and we're just amazed, how did the money come about to do that? And God just blessed us through supporters and through other means, and I just know God's going to take care of him there, so I really don't worry about him. I'm just excited to see him being used in a role of ministry.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to Darius as well and kind of get people to make this connection between you and him and his life story through that, because As I'm sure he'll talk to us later, I got to live with Darius. A lot of people don't know that. Darius came and lived with us for a year. Was he a junior or a senior at the time?
Junior. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, and he came and lived with us for that year, spent some time in the lower 48, as you are known to call it. And that was great. So Darius to me is family. So I've got to know his story and I'm excited for other people to see his story. But yeah, I can imagine as a parent, when your kid signs up to be a missionary, even though you're passionate about missions, you also know already all the hardships that they're going to face and all the good things that they're going to face. So I can imagine that is pretty exciting. And not that you're not excited for your other kids, but this is a missionary podcast. So, you know, they should have gone into the mission field if they wanted to get mentioned more tonight, I guess.
The cool thing is, though, that, yeah, he's going to face struggles and hard times, and we did in Huslia, but everybody faces those challenges in life. But yet I think the Lord allows those things to happen because then we rely upon him more and we grow in him more. And the challenges may be hard, but the blessings that come out of those challenges are pretty amazing sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. And I already know that unfortunately, I haven't gotten to meet Swindy yet, but I feel like I know her well just from Darius and then also from my parents getting to meet her. And I just think how amazed I am that God, like you said, Brenda, that God introduced them, and it's pretty obvious why he's down there now. So I'm excited for their family and seeing that go forward. So we're going to come back and talk to them later. We're going to talk about them a little bit more tonight. But I do have a few more questions because it's an interesting podcast. Like I said, Don and Brenda are slowly transitioning out of the mission field and into the pastoral role now. And yet they've got a lot of wisdom from what they've done in their time there. And one of the things that I do want all of the audience to kind of hear is that Don just wrote a book. Don, when was it published? Recently, I know, but can you tell me kind of when that actually came out?
Came out in April of this year, 2019.
Don, tell me a little bit about the book, if you could. I know it's called Alaskan Bush Adventures, Lessons from the Land, Lessons from the Lord, by Don Ernst. Can you tell me a little bit about the book?
Well, it's interesting because I have never wanted to write anything. And just with my struggles, especially with English and things. But yet, and so in all of our years in the village, I mean, obviously, there was a lot of different things that we experienced and a lot of lessons that the Lord was trying to teach us. And when we left the village, before we even left, I mean, when we'd go out on home service or furlough, whatever you want to call it, and we'd go around churches and I'd start telling a few stories, a lot of people would say, man, you should write a book. And I'm thinking, no, I'm not going to write a book. But then after we left the village, I mean, we left in the fall, and by the winter, I was sitting down beginning to write a book because it's like all of a sudden, though I had no desire to do it, all of a sudden the Lord just gave me a passion to write a book, to write down some of these experiences and lessons that he was trying to teach us. And so that's what I did. And I just started to write down those stories and interweave within those stories, Bible stories and lessons that fit in with what I was learning as we were living there in the village. And it was a slow process. Most people who know me, they know I'm kind of slow. So it took me a while to write all these stories. But eventually I wrote 30 stories and got tied in with Elm Hill Publishing, and they formatted it all for me and put it out there. And so, yeah, it came out. It was from the time I started writing till the time it finally came out on print was like 2 years.
Wow. That's, I love to hear, I was very interested. I was looking forward to talk to you about it because writing a book is no small task. It takes time. And I was, well, I guess, you know, there's no restaurants and no movies and so maybe that's where you got the time. well, what I was hoping actually tonight is maybe, could you don't have to, go into great detail, but can you kind of give a preview, a little example of what type of story is in there and the type of correlation that you made with what you were learning biblically? Just a brief example, maybe?
Well, one of the big events that happens in the village and in Hoosley especially is always dog racing. And like one of the greatest sprint racers of all time, George Atler, was from Hoosley. He was called the Hoosley Hustler. And as we spent time in the village, eventually my son-in-law got dogs. And I was of the age that I would fit into the old timers dog race. And so he kept trying to talk me into it. And I said, no, I ain't racing dogs. I don't know anything about dogs. And finally, one day he walked into my shop and he just flat out tell me, he say, the old timers race is tomorrow. It starts at 12 o'clock. You're going to be racing 8 dogs around the 6-mile track. Be there. And walked out the door. And so I was in the dog race. And through that dog race, that 6-mile course that I didn't have any idea where it was, I had a few mishaps along the way. And the dogs got off the trail and I fell off the sled. And just all kinds of things went wrong. But the thing that was, eventually I got always back on the trail and I finished the race. Even though I came in last, I finished the race. And for me, I mean, it just pointed out how important it was to stay on the trail if you're going to finish the race. And it just made me think of spiritually in our lives, there are so many distractions that come along and the world keeps pulling at us to get off the trail that God has set out before us. And it's easy to get off that trail. But we need to stay on the trail that God has set, and then that way we can finish the race that He's marked out for us.
So tell me, thinking about this, that's I think this is the reason people wanted you to write this book, is because things like that are, you can relate them to us and what we're going through in our own lives and finishing the race, and yet it comes from a pretty unique situation. I mean, none of us have ever experienced dog racing down here, so
you're lucky.
It's a What is that like? What can you just tell me what it's like racing dogs? What is that? You have 8 dogs, right? And you're on a sled standing up, if I'm not mistaken, and just getting drug around and trying to teach dogs to take you certain directions.
Hey, and they don't always go the direction you want them to go. I remember one race I helped put up barriers so that the dogs would make the turn when they were supposed to. I helped set those barriers with my son-in-law. And so we got on. As we were setting up one barrier, he said, now, when you get about this point, just start yelling, G, G, which will mean that dog is supposed to go to the right and to follow that trail to the right. And so I thought, okay, fine. I got on the dog. We started down the trail. And the cool thing about it is once you leave the people behind and you're out on the trail, it's like really quiet. And even though the dogs are running hard and working hard, you don't hear anything. You just hear the little swish of the runners going through the snow. And it's just a peaceful setting in a way, because you're just cruising by all this timber and yet it's quiet. And so it's kind of a neat setting, but they don't always listen. Cause when I came to that point that I was supposed to yell, G, I started yelling G, and no, they didn't go to the right. They went straight. And so anyhow, right through the barricade.
You're yelling G and they're thinking E, huh? That's what's going on here.
Yeah.
But that's a fun story. That's something that we don't get to experience much. So it's definitely worth a read. I hadn't got to that one yet. So I have read 3 or 4 of the stories though, and I definitely recommend it. So there's a couple places. I know right now we were just talking about this earlier tonight, but I would definitely say you need to get on. I found it on Amazon. That's probably the best place for people down here in Salida, Colorado to find it, wouldn't you say, Don?
Yeah, definitely go on Amazon. It's there. You can go on Christian Book Distributors or Barnes & Noble. It's there in those locations also.
Awesome. And right now I'm looking at it on Amazon, and you can get the hardcover for a discount of $23.57. You can get the paperback for like $9 and the Kindle for $4. So a bunch of different ways. I recommend buying all 3 because they support Don. So, as you figured out as a public, or as you figured out as an author now, it's very similar to mission work in the sense that you haven't become a millionaire off it yet, have you, Don?
I'm just hoping to get my investment back at this point. But I'll tell you, But Duke and I both said that, you know what, it is a ministry. And the reason I sat down and wrote all these stories out, because I felt like if I can share this with some people, and if it will draw somebody closer to the Lord, or there's a story in there where the gospel message is clearly presented, if someone will read this and become a follower of Christ, that's what it's all about. There's like no way I'm going to make money on this, but that's fine. I just want to, you know, hopefully have the Lord use it in such a way that it will encourage people and help them to grow in their walk.
Awesome. Well, I definitely recommend it. So get on Amazon, check it out. Like I said, you can get it on Kindle. You can get it on hardcover or paperback. It's got 4 reviews right now, Don. You may not know this, but you are just blowing up the internet right now with 5-star reviews left and right.
Once I figure out how to get on the internet, I'll check it out.
Okay, that sounds good. Next thing you know, Don's going to be buying the book and reviewing it. There's going to be 37 reviews from Don Ernst. Well, I don't want to keep you guys too much longer. I've been trying to get the podcast closer to an hour, and I've failed at it a couple times, but I'm trying my best to get it closer to an hour. And I do know, Brenda, that it's been a long week for you for your vocal cords, so I want to try to keep that in mind as well. But I got just a few more things. We're going to do some fun stuff if we can real quick, and then I do want to talk to you a little bit more about finances, and especially what that looks like for you as you're transitioning. So I guess the first thing I'd like to do, if you're up for it, is I kind of try to do some fun stuff at the end where people can get an idea of what life was like or is like in your mission field. And so I've asked questions like one of the weirdest things you've eaten or something that draws people into the mission that you've served in. So do you mind if I just ask you a couple fun questions, things that may have happened to you or that you've done up in, I think mostly Huslia?
Sure.
Do you have a few minutes for that?
Sure, go ahead.
All right, perfect. So what is the, I would say in the first couple of years, can you describe something that happened to you that maybe at the time didn't make you laugh, but now looking back on it really makes you laugh when you think about the difference between the culture that you had come from in Salida to Huslia, whether it be something even, you know, something weird that you had to eat or an experience like I know they've taken you on hunting trips or things like that, something that you've done that was just we would not experience in Salida. And looking back on it, even if it was uncomfortable, is actually a pretty funny moment for you.
I'll tell you a story about ice cream.
Perfect.
When we were, because I love ice cream, okay? And actually, Alaska, I think, consumes more ice cream percentage-wise than any other place in the U.S. But anyhow, so I hadn't had ice cream for quite a long time. And I remember one Sunday at church, they said, today we have a special treat. We're going to have ice cream after the service. And man, I thought, yeah, okay, I'm going to preach fast today because I want to get some ice cream. And the end of the service came and I went to the back where the ice cream was and I picked it up and it was in a little paper cup, a spoon in it. And I looked at it and I thought, man, that don't look like ice cream to me. But then I tried a little bit and I thought, it surely don't taste like ice cream. And then I found out that they call it Indian ice cream. And so basically, Indian ice cream is you take a whole lot of Crisco, you take some fish that you've kind of wrung out that's kind of dry and flaky then, and you put that in there, mix it in the Crisco, and then you can add a berry in it if you want to, like maybe some cranberries or whatever, blueberries, mix a little bit of that in it. And then there it is. That is Indian ice cream. And let me tell you what, you put that Crisco in your mouth and you try and chew it up and swallow it. It's pretty good.
Oh no, I've been trying to, I try not to talk. I even try to mute myself as much as possible so I don't come across your speakers sometimes when we're doing this, but I was really holding back the gagging noises there.
Yeah.
Crisco or Crisco fish ice cream had been delicious. Oh, that's horrible. Was it? What's the flavor of that, Don? What are they actually? Is there a flavor for that? Do they call it like eel or?
Well, A lot of times they would take pike, and that's the fish that they would wring out and kind of dry it out so it'd get flaky that they could mix it in.
They love it.
They get excited about it. It just didn't exactly fit my appetite.
No. So some people haven't had the experience of having you stay with them for a week, Don. But if you don't know what that's like, when Don comes to our house in Salida, my mom used to go out, and I would get so excited that Don was coming over because we would have cookies and Mountain Dew and ice cream for the whole week. And we stuff that we would never get. It was like, Don and Brenda are coming, and Don has a sweet tooth, so we got to only have junk food around the house. So when I think about that and then marry that with the ice cream that you got to experience, that is just an awesome story.
Well, if you ever come visit me again up here, yeah, it's pretty much soda pop and some chocolate.
It's pretty amazing. If you ever see a picture of Don, he's actually 108, and yet they say he's 70, but I think it's just all of those preservatives he's been putting in his body for the last 70 years. Oh, well, that is fantastic. That's exactly what I was looking for. A moment where I got to laugh until I cried and almost vomited. That's the perfect story. Oh, well, let me ask just, I want to talk a little bit. I always ask for money, and we're going to do that a little bit differently tonight. So, you guys are kind of retired now. So you sent out a newsletter recently to your supporters, thanking them for all their time and support. And it has been a big deal to you. So I'd like you to maybe let me know kind of what has it meant to you to have so many financial supporters along the way. And then also, can you tell me what you're looking for or what your needs are next?
Well, I guess this would be, an ideal time, an opportunity for us to say a great big thank you for people who have been giving, some for actually even since before we started mission work, when we were starting to take training and raising our support. And so, it's been 30 to 32 years for some people, maybe some just 1, 2, or 5 years, but it has been amazing how much that adds up, that people through the years have given up that they could have been using for themselves, for their life. And so I just want to say how much that means to us, how much we appreciate that you guys gave financially. And you've already heard my story of how much it meant to know that we had people praying for us as well. So just a great big thank you to you guys for 30 years or so of supporting us to do the ministry in Alaska.
Yeah, and I think the neat thing is once we came into the road system here, I mean, at that point, we were still full-time missionaries. But yeah, we started to do a part-time pastoral role here within the city. And now we've come to the point where we're just flipping the roles and we're going to go full-time pastoral and just part-time mission work. And so basically it's a switch, but yet the neat thing is because we will be part-time doing mission work still out in the village region, we'll be working with new missionaries that are coming onto the field and just kind of help them through some of their beginning years as the struggles and the culture shock and everything begins to hit, just to kind of be there to support them. And just the opportunity to still visit some of the villages and try and keep some of those doors open so that when there are missionaries to come up, that we can help maybe place them in a village. And so there'll be some neat things that we get to do. And there are some people who are out there doing ministry in the village and they really don't have an organization to support them. And so we will be going out to some of those villages to help those missionaries, try and encourage and support them. And so there'll be some neat things we get to do yet and still fly around and do some ministry out there in the villages. But it's definitely going to be on a part-time basis now. And so we're grateful for that opportunity, grateful for so many people that have helped us out through the years when we were doing full-time ministry with the mission. But I think now we're with becoming a full-time pastor on the road system here, you know, that's definitely changed our financial needs for sure.
I was going to say, are you still trying to raise some funds to do the part-time mission, or are you pretty much going off of donations?
Yeah, a lot of donations. We just need minimal, just to kind of help cover some airplane expenses and things like that. So it's minimal. And basically through this time frame, when we sent out our letter, we're encouraging people to consider, you know, if they want to support someone else, you know, to encourage them to make that change and do that step. And that's kind of where we're at.
Are there any names that you'd like to throw out of people to support?
Well, a lot of people do know other missionaries that they would like to support. But if there's somebody, if they don't know anybody, they don't know who to pick up. Yeah, I would throw out our son, Darius Ernst, in Cancun, Mexico, with YWAM, Youth with the Mission. And you can find them on the internet by just typing in YWAM Cancun. And he's got a staff now of maybe 20 people or so. I mean, it's growing. And so they definitely, not just personally himself needing some support for their ministry, but just for the whole organization to keep the staff raises their own support, but just, the buildings they need to do the teaching of the classes in and board the students in. There's just a lot of those expenses that are needed as well. So I guess, yeah, we could throw out our son's name, huh?
one of the cool ministries that it had that my wife mentioned earlier was the ministry in Kunamaya, which is the squatters village. And when they started doing the kids ministry out there, they started out with this small number. I don't know if it was like 20 kids or 30 kids, something like that. But he was just telling us the other day that they're getting close to 200 kids now. And so that ministry is just really exploding. And besides ministering to the kids now, they've also started a ministry with the moms of some of those kids. And I think they said there's like 30 moms now that are coming to those sessions, and they teach Bible and they teach English. And so it's a great ministry. Besides just doing the physical construction of building a more permanent structure, which is like a 12x16 cinder block house, besides doing those, then they're doing all these other things with the teaching of math and English and Bible.
Yeah, I wanted to give you an opportunity to share Darius and some of his story. One of the things that we talk about in marketing, and which is somewhat what we're doing here, is we're trying to get people to know our missionaries and if they have extra money to support them. One of the things is we talk about finding someone to be your champion. And you can tell your story very well, but when somebody else tells your story, like when... It's going to be hard. Well, it's hard for you to tell exactly the things that you did. You're humble people, and the same is going to be true for Darius. So to hear from a parent's perspective of what they're doing and what their ministry is there, it opens up a great deal to me to have. It lends that credibility that I think a lot of people are excited to hear. I've just heard some stuff from you that, you know, they. Darius may be more humble than he'll tell us about. So it's nice to have a champion. And I know that you're always champions of your kids. So thanks for sharing some of that. And so if Don and Brenda are looking for minimal, but at the same time, occasional donations. But if you are looking to support a missionary, you might also consider Darius, because I think he's doing unbelievable work. And you can still go back and find the week that he came and preached at our church, and it was an unbelievable message in a week there. So if you get on the Grace Church YouTube channel, you can go back and find that week from him as well and watch that. So I think that's it, guys. I feel like I could talk a ton more, but I don't want to take your whole night. I guess if you don't mind, I'd just like to kind of pray for you and thank God for the time that you have been in the ministry and for all the many blessings that you've been to our church and our lives. And then we'll maybe say goodbye if that's okay with you.
All right. Yep. Thank you.
You bet. All right. Father God, we just thank you so much for Don and Brenda. They've been so special in me and my family's lives over the years. And we're just so thankful for everything that they've that you've called them to do and that they've been able to do through you, Father. And we just, we think about their time in Huslia, and we know that it can be a difficult place to feel called, and yet you called the right people to the right place and there were no mistakes. You knew exactly what you needed, and you knew exactly who you needed to do it. And so we're so thankful for everything that you've blessed them with, and that over the years you've continually blessed them with enough income to where they can now, as they've gotten older, they can now meet your next step and your next mission for them, Father. And we just pray for this new endeavor. We pray for Don. We always lift up leadership of our churches, and we know how hard and how difficult that can be. And yet we know that, again, you've found the right person for the right place, Father. And so I do lift up Don and Brenda as they take on this role pastoring the church in the North Pole. And we just pray that you'll guide them and give them wisdom in the way that they teach and in the way that they are the priests of your people, Father, and shepherding your people. Again, we thank you so much for all the missionaries that you've put in different places throughout the world. And we just especially thank you for Don and Brenda. So in Jesus' name, amen.
Well, thank you for taking the time to do something like this. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been my pleasure. I've had such a good time getting to know people more. This is a fun one for me because I feel like we know each other pretty well, although we still only see each other every few years. So
it is good to reconnect, and because it does bring back a lot of memories. And for me personally, it brings back good memories of being with your mom and dad and staying with them and sitting around the kitchen table and whipping you in cards. Yepers.
Yeah. Okay. The good news is I get to make my own outro. So I'm going to let you all know, stick around for the outro and I'll tell you exactly how good Don is at Pinochle. We get to edit anything we want to in these podcasts. Well, thanks guys. It's been great catching up with you. Have a wonderful night tonight.
Okay. We see you.
All right. See you later.
All right, bye.
Okay, I think it's definitely time to set the record straight. First of all, Don has never won a card game in his entire life. He often makes up rules and cheats and still finds many epic ways to lose those games. So, sorry, Don, doesn't lend you a lot of credibility when you're lying on a podcast like that, man. I have to be honest, though. He's just not good at it. I'm also exceptionally good at it, so there is that. But he's not good at it, and that's important that you understand that. I hope you had a lot of fun tonight. We really enjoyed the show, and I just think that it's a great opportunity for us to get to know them. Definitely, you can check them out. They're not asking for much money anymore, unlike some of our other missionaries who are in need. But, you know, it's nice to see what a mission life is like that's, you know, it's been in existence for a long time and their mission work is coming to an end. And yet, I don't know, you can't really call it, you would call it a success, but at the same time, really, it's just interesting to see what their life was like from beginning, middle, end, and what they're doing now with their mission life, that is. So it was really fun to see. I hope you tune in again next month, and definitely check out the article as well. We'll get into a little bit more detail and give you some opportunities to connect with them. Definitely reach out to them. Pray for Don and Brenda, as always, especially as they're starting this new job pastoring a church. That's something that we always want to pray for our leaders, but especially for somebody who's been a missionary in our church for a while and is now stepping into that role. Pray for him there. So thanks for listening. Have a great night, and we'll see you next month.
Fountain fair. and sinners plunge beneath that flood, lose all their guilty stains, lose all their guilty stains, lose all their guilty stains, and sinners plunge beneath that flood, lose all their guilty stains. The dying thief rejoiced to see that fountain in his day, and there may I, though vile as he, wash all my sins away, wash all my sins away, wash all my sins away. Wash all my sins away. Dear dying lamb, thy precious blood shall never lose. Some church of God be saved to sin no more. Be saved to sin no more. Be saved to sin no more. Till all the ransom church of God be saved to sin no more. And since by faith I saw the stream, thy flowy wounds redeeming love has been my theme and shall be till I die, and shall be till I die, and shall be till I die. Redeeming love has been my theme and shall be till I die. Woo! When this or this fiend stammering tongue lies silent in the grave, then in a nobler, sweeter song I'll sing thy power to save. I'll sing thy power to save. I'll sing thy power to save. I'll sing thy one of the sweetest songs I'll sing.